Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. March 1, 2020. My thoughts on Twitter, the 3rd of January 2020. Rabash, letter 8, after acquiring love of friends, sparks of love shine, the heart longs and yearns for them. I come out of this world and its corporeal desires. And it seems to me that there is nothing in the world besides me and the friends. And then the I is annulled as well and dissolves in the friends. Rabash, letter 40, when one feels the friend's love, joy awakens in him. Since he always knew that only he cares about himself. But when he discovers that the friend cares for him, joy awakens in him and he can no longer care for himself. Balhasulam, 600,000 souls. A sign of the complete correction of the desire is when a person feels that his soul, desire, dwells in everyone and in each one. And he does not feel that he is a part separated from others, but a part that depends on everyone. And he becomes perfect, with no defect, and the light of the soul shines in him. Mutual inclusion has a unique quality. I possessed a single strength in the system of Adam, but after the breakage I include myself into each person above the power of rejection. Each one of us becomes many times stronger than the one unit of strength in the system of Adam. If we include our friends' strength in us, everyone will be able to overcome their evil. Our evil comes from the broken connections between us in the system of Adam. Once the connection was broken, all that was left in us was the force of the benefit of evil. Turning to the Creator is a prayer, a request for Him to correct what He's broken. We're using the fragments of a purposely broken vessel in order to learn to build it out of pieces, like children do with Legos, developing through it and growing until we receive a spiritual kli. The work of man is to cause the work of the Creator. We are obligating the Creator to do this work. So He does. My sons have defeated me. The Creator acts like we do, fulfilling requests of our children. Kids plead with their parents, we need to plead with the Creator. He is awaiting our plea. Fighting rejection, we're building our common appeal to the Creator, demanding that He unite us. If our request reaches the needed strength, deepness, and quantity of those asking, the whole 10, once we are able to make such a request, the Creator will do the work. There is no hidden palace of the Creator, it will become revealed if we create it. We're building one vessel from our egoistic desires. Everyone feels mutual rejection and doesn't want to unite. If we demand the power of unity from the Creator above it, He will bring us closer together and will become manifest in the vessel created by Him. The goal is to unite between ourselves in the corrected tens like cells of one body, forming a benevolent influence on the Creator. This part of the broken soul of Adam will come to life and pull all the other parts with it, causing the correction of all systems of the common soul. World Kabbalah Convention 2020. From my Facebook page, Michael Leitman, the 3rd of January 2020. 3 days. 150 countries. 26 languages. 5,000 participants. 3,000 virtual connections. World Kabbalah Convention 2020. Death and I. Question. Our mind refuses to accept the inevitability of death. When one receives information that associates him with death, something tells him that this data is unreliable. We can sometimes predict the death of others, but will almost always be wrong about predicting our own. Experts tell us that subconsciously we ignore facts and perceive ourselves as someone who will have a lengthy existence, if not eternity. Why do we feel this way? Answer: it is because no living being can or should understand that he is mortal at all. Everything in this world should propel us forward. We must create, execute things, and leave something after us. Question: to acknowledge one's mortality, to have the fear of death, does it have an effect on us? Answer: The fear of death is the fear of non-existence. How can I imagine a world where I no longer exist? This is a terrible rejection of egoism. What is a world? It is I who exist. I know the world, understand it, and feel it. I am in it, in the center of it. But here, I suddenly disappear. What remains in the world? I can only perceive it through my senses. If there is no I, then this is the end of it all. Our ego cannot conceive of the notion that the world can exist without it. The only solution is to explain to people that the world is eternal, endless, and perfect. It is completely different from the way that we perceive it. In order to see it differently, we have to rise up to the level of the quality of love and bestowal. Question: does it mean that we will break free and rise above our egoism? Answer: yes. We will see it in the quality opposite egoism. The fact that we are created in a particular quality should not limit us. We have to see the world differently, multilaterally. We will then be able to see the world and ourselves in some sort of connection. Question: are you saying that if I rise above my egoism, I will reach the quality of love and bestowal and see the world as eternal? Thus, I become eternal too? Answer: yes. Question: so, it follows that death does not exist? Answer: death does not exist in the quality of bestowal. Question: will people come to perceive themselves as eternal? Answer: yes, the science of Kabbalah explains this to us. We can only do it if we have the desire for it. From Cab TV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, the 24th of October 2019. Study in Kabbalah. Question: a 10 is a mini model of society. Instead of working with all of humanity, which, in principle, is not yet possible, did the Kabbalists take, like a hologram, the most minimal cell in which it is possible to implement the method? Answer: that is absolutely right. Comment: Kabbalists say that two people are also minimal for a society. My response: in principle, for lack of anything else, there can be two. After all, then a person begins to feel the difference between himself and the other: who is I and who is he? But in fact, you can only achieve the altruistic quality of bestowal quickly and correctly if you are in the 10. Question: there are many things written about the 10 in the Kabbalistic sources. Kabbalists have always been studying in such a way. Was there no learning for two people? Answer: this was at the beginning of the foundation and development of Kabbalah. However, in those days there were special souls and special conditions. Question: is it possible today for a Kabbalist teacher to teach just one person? Do we teach privately? Answer: there can be private teachers. When my friend and I came to Rabesh, he gave us his disciple as a teacher, a man of advanced years, and the two of us studied with him for 6 months. Question: there were no people who wanted to study Kabbalah back then? Is this possible today? Answer: no. I do not think that this is even useful. The group is best of all. In Kabbalah, everything is so tied to the connection between friends that other ways of studying are not effective. Question: what about the initial stage, at least to understand what this is about? Answer: it is possible. There may be private lessons at that stage. However, that is not movement toward the goal but filling with knowledge. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, the 20th of March 2019. If I do not want to advance. Question: is one lifetime enough to climb the degrees of the spiritual worlds? Answer: do not worry. This is not your task. You must rise either by a good or not so good path. The choice of the path depends on you. If you exert, you will rise quickly and win every moment of your life for the sake of the ascent. And if you are lazy, of course, you will be urged forward, or even left alone, and then you will have to catch up with the others. In general, there are different possibilities. In order not to confuse you, I will say only one thing: systematic classes, participation in a group. In our common events, this is the necessary minimum for a normal, smooth, safe ascent. If you want to move faster, there are additional classes, courses, and so on. If you want to move even faster, there are other options. Question: what if I want to stop, and I say, the first degree is enough for me, I feel good here. You can go forward and I will stand here. Answer: each person will have to reach their spiritual route. It does not depend on him or her. No one asks you about it. You are given only a very narrow range in which you can decide how to rise, by your own efforts or by being pushed from behind. There is a very interesting mechanism. It works on a simple principle, similar to dealing with slaves. If you work well, you do not get blows, but if you hesitate, they immediately begin to hit you. Question: does it mean that it is impossible to stop somewhere in the middle of the path? Answer: you can stop, but you will receive blows. So, you cannot just wave it away. We are dealing with the law of nature. Therefore, no requests will help. If you are given certain conditions, you must meet them. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, January 5th/2020. Michael Leitman, on Quora: why are people so lazy? People who are lazy generally lack purpose in their lives. Our nature is a desire to enjoy. This desire manifests in two directions: either we have a goal and strive in order to achieve it, enjoying the fruit it bears, or we run away from pain, and avoiding suffering is what we consider as enjoyable. In order to gain the impetus to progress in life, where we do more than merely run away from pain, we need to establish what our purpose in life is, and it needs to be worth the effort to achieve. There is generally no success in any field without effort. Effort is a prerequisite for success because contributing to something makes us value the results. If we were given something without first having invested effort, we would not know how to enjoy it. However, in order to have the constant fuel to strive, the goal needs to be important. I have been studying and teaching the wisdom of Kabbalah for over 40 years. The immense importance of the purpose of the study provides me with the motivation to work day and night. It is because investing in this work means investing in the human soul. Therefore, the efforts that I apply, even though they might be tough and unpleasant at times, bring me tremendous joy. The same goes for all people. If we find a goal that suits our inner request, it will give us the fuel we need to work determinately in order to achieve it, and experience no tiredness on the way. The main challenge is in setting the goal. Our desires and yearnings are affected by various social influences. Unfortunately, the enormous amount of redundant information filling our culture extinguishes our true internal aspiration, replacing it with cheap and artificial pleasures. Nevertheless, everybody has a chance to exit this vicious circle. How? Ironically, it is with the help of laziness. Laziness gives us an opportunity to slow down from the rat race and ask ourselves whether our regular engagements really lead to something worthwhile, whether our ultimate goal is correct, and whether we have enough importance and motivation to continue. If not, then we can examine the ways to change our goals and actions. New Life Number 1196: Understanding Prohibitions in the Torah.
Hello, and thanks for being with us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Leitman. Hello, Dr. Leitman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Nitza. Hello. And today we'd like to talk about prohibitions in the Torah according to the wisdom of Kabbalah. A person that reads the Torah, that studied the Torah, that heard about it, He discovers that there are many prohibitions. So we'd like to see what does the wisdom of Kabbalah say about this on our way to a better life. Be with us, Nitza, please.
Yeah, I'll start with a personal story. As a teenager, I stayed with a friend. And it was a religious home, and there are different laws, and I came from a completely secular home, and I'm not familiar with these rules, with these laws, and by mistake I turned off the light, and I remember how she stared at me. She didn't even say anything, just how she stared at me. I was really frightened. Afterwards I wanted to ask, why is it prohibited, and so on, and as a teenager I already understood that the way I saw it, that these prohibitions aren't something rational that someone can explain, but it's simply this how you have to do it, and that's that. And what I like, especially in the wisdom of Kabbalah, is that you can ask about everything why, and try and understand the rationale behind it. So I'd like to understand the prohibitions. This is what we'd like to talk about today, about the prohibitions in the Torah, that there are many prohibitions. There are the mitzvot of do and don't do. So let's talk about the prohibitions a moment, the way the Torah presents them. What's the rationale behind them? What are these prohibitions? We're living in a kind of bubble, the laws of which we don't really understand. We learn a bit about the laws from physics, from chemistry, but the real laws, we're not familiar with them. The wisdom of Kabbalah talks about the spiritual laws that are revealed as the forces of the upper nature. The upper nature is called the force of bestowal. The nature of our world is the force of reception. The upper nature are altruistic forces, and the nature of this world are egoistic forces. So, there is a very simple law, just one law of the upper nature, that it is forbidden to be an egoist. This is the central prohibition, that it's forbidden to be an egoist. Yeah. Meaning, whatever action a person does to his own benefit is prohibited. Any action that a person does to the benefit of others is called a mitzvah. So you already have a mitzvah and a prohibition. And that's it. What else do you want to know? I'm done. So, you're saying, I put it simple. Prohibited is everything that I do to my own benefit. Everything that's egoistic is forbidden. It's like Hillel that told that proselyte that came to him, don't do to others what you hate. Okay, but I, as a secular person, I see that there are many customs or mitzvot in the spiritual world. To us, it's clear, those that are in spiritual attainment, that have revealed the spiritual world, to them it is clear what's allowed and what's prohibited. Whereas in our world, it's not that clear. Like you say, to light a candle, or light, or a lamp on Saturday, what kind of transgression am I committing here? Who am I harming? True? So, just to try and understand, according to the wisdom of Kabbalah, what's the difference between what's allowed and what's forbidden? Forbidden, I understand, that's an egoistic action. It's forbidden to use the ego, and it's allowed to use the force of bestowal and love. If so, and in the Torah, it's very elaborately explained that this forbidden, that's forbidden, and so on. So what, it's a kind of a work plan or something. I don't even know how to put it, but something that helps me understand what's forbidden. The Torah doesn't talk about this world at all. The Torah is called sanctity. Sanctity in Hebrew means that this is something different, separate, that doesn't talk about this world. It explains the laws of the upper world, the spiritual laws, and therefore, it explains to us what's allowed and what's forbidden for a person that is in the upper world, that attains, that perceives the upper world, and whoever is not there isn't. And therefore, in regard to spiritual laws, whoever is not in the spiritual world, then there's no problem. Still, what does a person have to understand about the prohibition in order to keep it in some way? No. What we can keep in our world in order to enter the spiritual world is all in all the law of love of others. So it means that if I want to spiritually evolve, then what's the first thing that's prohibited to do and what's the first thing that I have to do? Whatever is bad for you, don't do to others. Meaning not to harm others. This is the first thing that's forbidden to do. Yeah. And vice versa. What I think is beneficial to others, maybe not, who knows? Maybe you'll start giving me such flavors that you're used to and that you think are good, but I don't. So it's clear that if you don't like something and don't do it to me, then that's already good. But if we're talking about giving something to someone, then not necessarily. Now, we see that in the Torah, there are so many prohibitions. So what, they were written just so? No. It's only an explanation of the usage of the ego, only written in the language of this world. But what it really talks about are spiritual actions. These prohibitions, are they there to protect us in some way? Right? God forbid not to allow us to fall into our ego, because by that, we lose our spiritual form, our spiritual degree. I must say, I remember also as a teenager, in general, I always saw the Torah as something that is all the time trying to restrict me. This forbidden, that's forbidden. A feeling that there's something that really limits you. That, like, gives you a feeling that you're doing something wrong. This was the general feeling. Now, from the point of view of the wisdom of Kabbalah, from the point of view of someone who wants to ask questions and who wants to keep evolving, does the Torah really limit us so much? The Torah does not limit us. Its purpose is to invert a person from how he is now, that in regard to the Torah, in relation to the Torah, he's considered a beast, to something called an Adam, a human being in Hebrew. Adam in Hebrew means to be similar to the upper force, incomplete bestowal, love, love of others. So it's not that it limits, but it guides, it directs. No. Now, I think that this feeling that also exists among the seculars, it also exists in regard to the Jewish people, also when others look at us from the outside in, we always look different. Those that have laws of their own, that this allowed, this forbidden, do this, don't do that. We're always seen as something very... I can't really explain myself, but you're looking at different customs. Customs, not laws, but customs that are unrelated to the Torah, but it has to do with human behavior, with a phenomenon formed, shaped by people in our world. But really? The entire Torah is something that you have to keep in your heart, in the relationships between people and only. This is what the Ibn Ezra writes. So you're saying that we, as human beings, have created different customs and traditions, and this is how others see us too. Yeah, they only see the actions that we perform, but really it's not about the actions, but it's about correcting the heart. Okay, now let's talk about the punishments. Because going back to the story we started out with, I remember that my friend, she told me, what, don't you know it's prohibited? You're going to be punished. So not only that I don't understand what I'm doing, I'm also going to be punished for something that I don't understand. So what are these punishments that the Torah talks about? Does it really punish a person? No. If I breach some prohibition that I don't even understand, no. A person who doesn't understand what he's doing, so he doesn't get any punishment. No, then what are all these punishments that, all these things, again, I'm repeating, that everything that the Torah demands is love of others, and in regard to love of others, it judges a person, and only. So, it's not that there's some upper force that's watching me, did I or didn't I do something, and punishes me if I don't do something. It's not the upper force, but you are in a system of forces called nature, or the upper force, or the creator, it doesn't matter how you call it. It's a very rigid system that entirely functions according to the law of the ideal connection between all of its parts, and according to the complete connection of all forces, and you are inside the system of forces, like in a network. And to the measure to which you, according to your development, according to your degree, are similar to this system, you feel good. If you're not similar, or to the measure to which you're not similar, you feel bad, that the bad that you feel comes in order to straighten you out and to direct you towards the good. So how would you really define the concept of punishment? Is there such a thing as punishments in spirituality? No, it's called correction. So the wisdom of Kabbalah doesn't talk about punishments, but about corrections. Right. Okay, so let's try and sum up what we learned up until now. Because it's a completely different way of looking at things than the one that we're familiar with. So a prohibition is not to be an egoist. Punishment, there's no such thing as punishments, but corrections. Another thing is that the Torah, it doesn't restrict or limit you, it guides you, directs you. Yeah. So, the perception of the wisdom of Kabbalah is very different than what we're familiar with. So, if I want to keep the laws correctly, I do want to evolve, I don't want to do things that are egoistic, that are to my own benefit. How do I evolve in the correct and the right direction in order to keep these prohibitions, not because someone told me to, but because I really feel that it's the wrong thing to do? So we're going back to what Hillel said, don't do to others what you hate. So this is my first guidance. I see that it begins with prohibitions. It doesn't say do. First of all, don't do. Don't do what you don't like, don't do to others. I'd like to ask about one more thing. I understand the general definition of things. Now I want to take a specific example. In the Torah it says a lot about the Sabbath. One thing it says, don't light fire on Sabbath. How is that related to everything that we talked about up until now? Not to be an egoist, to first and foremost keep yourself from harming, and then also to try and benefit. Let's take the example of not lighting fire on Sabbath. What about that? Sabbath is a state called the end of correction, where everything, including everything, works ideally only in order to bestow, to give, to fulfill others, love others. That's called Sabbath. All the prohibitions on Sabbath are talking about those actions that we were allowed to do before the end of the correction of the ego, when it still wasn't entirely in order to bestow. I kind of lost you. The first thing you said was that Sabbath is a symbol. The Sabbath is a symbol to a completely corrected state where everything works in love and bestowal toward each other. Yes. Okay, so this I understand. Sabbath is a symbol for what? For the peak of our development? Yes. What's the next thing? The prohibitions. The prohibitions on Sabbath are those things that you do that are not for the sake of correcting the whole of reality toward connection. I don't understand. Everything stems from the shattering, from the sin of the tree of knowledge, that there was a tightly closed system that was ideally connected between all of its parts. And that system is called the soul of Adam HaRishon. Literally meaning the first Adam. And that system broke. The connections inside that system between all of its parts broke. And everything that happens since then is only how to reunite, collect, and reconnect those parts to how they were before. Even though that there's a confusion between all the parts because they all fell and mixed with one another and whatnot. What we have to do is to scrutinize each and every detail. These are desires, each and every desire. What is it related to? Is it in favor or against connection? And what kind of connection between them and what kind of constellation are they supposed to be? And this is our work. Over a period of what we call 6,000 years. Now, when we start scrutinizing these laws in spirituality, what do you mean when you say in spirituality? Spirituality meaning how to connect them, even though that these broken desires, they're all egoistic, and each of them rejects the others, and each of them, on the other hand, wants to control the others. Meaning besides not wanting to belong to anyone, I also want to control everyone else. So, if we scrutinize these relations, we reach these conditions of don't do to others what you hate, love another as yourself, the kind of connection that the Ten Commandments talk about, and so on. Now, when we start revealing these laws, particularly in regard to the broken soul, then there we have plenty of laws about how each and every broken desire connects with the rest of the broken desires. And so what we get is our 620 actions that we have to connect and to bring them to the degree of love. 620 actions. It says that there are 613 mitzvot in the Torah, so there are an additional 7. Okay, all in all, 620 actions that restore the system that fell apart into its harmonious state, where all the parts in the system work in love toward each other. Yes. Going back to my question of don't light fire on Sabbath. Sabbath is called the day of the end of correction, where all the desires are connected with one another, where everything is ideally connected, all of the parts are ideally connected, and we have restored the soul of Adam HaRishon to its perfectly corrected form like it was before the shattering. And now someone lights fire, meaning he's performing a certain action, and it doesn't matter if it's small or great, lighting fire or doing something else, that there's no room for, because everything's already corrected. Everything's corrected. Meaning, if you'll try to do or add something, you'll only ruin things. Yeah? And this is why it's forbidden to do. And therefore, what do you do on Sabbath? You sit. Not to stand in the way of perfection. Whatever you do now will breach the perfection. Yep. I eat something, I bless for the food, I do things that are allowed to do because by doing them I don't build anything new. And this is a symbol, if we're talking about our world, this is a symbol that we're not making any corrections. What are corrections? Connections, where everything's already connected. We brought all of creation back from its shattering, from the sin of the tree of knowledge, to how it was before, to how it used to be. So, the peak of our evolvement as a human species is for all of us to be connected as components in one perfect system, and that's called the soul. So it broke in order for us to rebuild it. It's like giving children a puzzle. Yeah. Now, this thing, this state that we're so far from, let's just put it aside a second, because the relationships between people aren't that way at all. But you're saying that this is the peak of our development as human beings, and that's called the day of Sabbath, but we're not there yet. So what, once a week we have to remind ourselves where we headed? Why is there this cycle? Yeah, we have to learn that because the entire system works in a cycle, that we have such stages that it goes through called states or sefirot, chesed gvura tiferet, netzach hod yesod malchut. Malchut is the seventh day, the Sabbath, that if we correct ourselves in chesed gvura tiferet, netzach hod and yesod, in the 6 work days, then the 7th day is the connection of all of them together, giving us the spiritual attainment of what we have achieved. But when we attain the spiritual attainment in spirituality, then it's forbidden for us to do work there. It's all in all the sum total of the 6 work days, of our work in the 6 work days, and therefore this is how we behave in our world. Everything that we're doing is only a symbol. So the symbol called the day of Sabbath, that after the 6 work days, I have the Sabbath, this is all a symbol, a sign that reminds me about the final goal of the correction of the system, where we have to rebuild it and so on. Yeah. Now, when we'll reach this perfect state where there's nothing more to correct, to build, because nothing's corrupted anymore, then therefore, as a result, as a projection or as a copy in our world, there's also the day of Sabbath and so on. Yeah, the 39 forbidden, prohibited actions that are all actions of building, of putting back together the puzzle. Yeah. So, things, this is what I understand. Things aren't in their simple meaning, that it's written about this in the Torah, and that today there is Sabbath on the calendar. These are like pointers that tell us about states that we didn't reach yet, that it's the Sabbath. It doesn't mean that we have reached love between us.
Right,
we're still far from it. It's like typing in Waze, what's my destination? So the final destination for people is Sabbath for the entire world. So the Torah is something much broader. It's not only for religious Jews. It's the law of all the worlds. It's the law of the whole of reality. It's the final stop of the whole of reality toward which all of us have to head. And we're doing it only still by forces that force us to do it. Last question. The Torah is divided into two kinds of mitzvot, do and don't do. And there are many more mitzvot of don't do. What are these? And why are there more don't do than do? Because it's forbidden for us to use our ego in all the different possible options that it can be used, and all the different variations. So first of all, don't do. Meaning it's forbidden for you to use your egoistic desire. The more divided it is, the more it wants to erupt in different directions. Therefore, the mitzvot of don't do are so harsh, and there are so many of them. Whereas the mitzvot of do, these are mitzvot of, if you do them, you do. If you don't, you don't. Let's say it's for the more advanced. Yeah, it's to make things more subtle. Make what more subtle? The state called the end of correction. You can either bring or not bring your wife flowers. Some fancy challah or an ordinary piece of bread, which is also good. I see. Last question. Just like the example you gave with the Sabbath, that we shouldn't understand things literally, that this isn't what they mean. But were we to now discuss all the prohibitions of the Torah, you'd show me something more internal that's related to the interactions between the parts and the broken system on their way to becoming a harmonious system.
Yeah.
So without having the big picture and understanding how all these details work, together, how they're connected together, I can't understand what it says in the Torah. So what's the most important thing to know about the prohibitions in the Torah? Don't do to others what you hate, if we're talking about prohibitions. And if it's to do, then love another as yourself. Thank you very much, Dr. Leitman. Thank you, Nitza. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.